This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You better clutch your nuts, honey, because it's time for Squirrel Talk.
Oh, hey, everyone.
Oh, hi. I can't not do a Vicky voice.
You have to do the Vicky voice. You have to do the Vicky voice. Do it again.
Hi, squirrel friends. It's me, Vicky Licks, mother of the House of Licks.
It's the Squirrel Talk with Vicky Licks. Still, we just can't get rid of her.
Oh, we can't get rid of me.
And we've got a fun episode today because we have a guest from Camp Wanakiki. You've never heard of it.
Never. Sure. What is that show? What is that?
I don't know, but I was on it.
Apparently. I don't remember being on TV ever.
No one else does either. But we have, they had a fifth season. Can you believe? No
one? Sorry, say that again.
Fifth.
They had a fifth.
It's 55th.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the 55th season of Camp Wanakiki, a show that no one's ever heard of. Now that it's not on YouTube, no one watches it anymore. But that's okay.
You can borrow my Out TV password, nikki.nazrala@gmail.com. Password is Alaska5000. Go for it.
Yeah, go watch it now. There, don't complain at me anymore, Norway person. All right.
You'll need a VPN to Canada, and then you'll be great.
But the season has been out now, and the whole thing has played, and we have a winner of the season, the campiest camper of them all. Again, and we have invited them onto the pod just to, like, congratulate them and celebrate them and, I don't know, talk about them.
I can't wait to find out who it is.
You don't even know? You didn't even watch it?
I've never seen an episode.
This was part of the assignment, Selena.
I'm on season 3.
You're on season 6. I told you to audition for season 6, but you didn't.
Sorry.
You didn't.
I'm busy preparing for another pageant happening this week,
right,
a comedy pageant.
All right. Do you want me to introduce this person or not?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. It is the winner of... Yeah, it's been enough time. If you need... For the moment, you, like, turn off the podcast right now, I guess, but I don't know. The winner of season 5 of Camp Wanakiki, it is the one and only...
Miss Texas 1988. You're a winner, baby. You won.
I'm a big wiener.
You're a hot
what
dog.
A winner you are. Congratulations, number one. How do you feel?
Fine.
I'm okay.
I'm still processing it. I'm having an identity crisis. I'm failure is my brand.
That's true. Congratulations.
Congrats.
It was very well deserved. Not to say that you didn't have competition, because you really did. This is a great season.
You keep talking, Selena. I'm cleaning off Coca-Cola so I spit all over my...
Just leave it on, Hillary.
It was so funny.
I was very honored and immediately and intimidated when walking into this season because of all of the talent. So there certainly was competition.
Did you know who everybody else was when you walked in, or had you not heard of most of them?
No, I wasn't familiar, but I, of course, like, as soon as we got to, like, find out, because I think it was like just like a day before they were like, oh, we're creating a chat with everyone. Oh. And then immediately went through and like, you know, Instagram, Facebook stalked everyone and was impressed and excited. Same.
Yeah. Were you on, did you drive, I guess? Cause you were, well, you're from Seattle. Did you drive or fly?
I drove.
No. How long is that? It's like 5-6 hours. How long is that?
It was 3 days.
Oh my God.
Driving and yeah. Technically, actually, the first time, because it was still so smoky from the wildfires, I did it in two. We just really pushed it, me and my sibling.
God.
Yeah, so we stopped in, like, Billings, Montana, and found, like, a cheap motel and stayed there because we were planning on camping, but it was too hard to breathe. So we did that, and then just pushed it. Yeah, and then I camped on my way back. I had brought my tent to camp.
All your stuff?
No.
Yeah.
Wow. And it all fit in the car? Because, like, I mean, what did you take, like, a minivan or something? Because that's, you had a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was just my car. I was very, it was packed to the brim, but I was really strategic in how I brought stuff. I kept as much as I could of each look, like, in a measured plastic tote so that I could lock it into my car.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, like Tetris.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I had two suitcases. Two.
You just had two suitcases.
She had to get on a plane. You had to. Didn't you ship stuff in advance?
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, like, how?
I had three. Okay. I had three suitcases.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was hard.
Traveling with Dreg is hard. And especially when you have to do all of that. And
I mean, you killed it. I remember when Clinica came to town, they drove and had like a whole clown buggy full of cardboard. I was very worried.
Yeah, I mean, some people brought, like, did ship like huge boxes, and it cost them like thousands of dollars. I mean,
damn.
Yeah.
And joke's on them. You won.
I mean, gas alone. Jeez, like, it was not like,
yeah.
Yeah,
so tell us about yourself, because you bill yourself as the queen of failure. Mm-hmm. Have you been in some pageants? Because you were talking about you did that pageant number where you reveal into a failure perhaps before. Have you done it in a pageant before?
Yeah. So the origin of my name is Texas 1988. I showed up at a venue for a show and was wearing just a blue sparkly dress and like a ratted red wig. And the bartender was like, who the hell are you, Miss Texas 1988? And I was like, oh, absolutely. So that is, but I
came it's so back. Good.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I came back to that same venue and did one of my early drag acts as like this Miss Texas 1988 failure pageant queen. My talent was eating butter. During the swimsuit portion, I like, you know, popped both of my breasts. And like, it was a whole thing that I started with. At the end, I like don't win the crown.
Okay.
But I have done a lot of other actual competitions, and weirdly, I do actually have a track record for winning. there's an infamous one called Bacon Strip, which is an unpageant, where I intentionally did it very, you know, poorly. And the final outfit we came out for crowning, I wore a burlap sack that said failure on the front. And I was barefoot and my tears were smeared on my face.
Okay.
And they actually crowned me as the winner for about 12 hours. And then they called me the next day and I picked up the phone by saying, are you calling to tell me the points were wrong and somebody else won? And they said,
God.
We wish we weren't.
Oh my God.
Oh no. Yes.
The winner was Old Witch, another amazing local queen who totally deserved it. I think everyone was surprised that she hadn't like gotten the win. They tallied the points. But for me, that was to go into an unpageant and win in a failure sack to find out that was the best possible scenario.
That is perfect. It was perfect. You couldn't have written that. It was perfect. Did you
for
start
those
drag-
of you who want to know, the real Texas 1988 is Courtney Ann Gibbs Makaro.
So technically there are two. There's Courtney Gibbs and there's Christina Castro, because there's a Miss Texas 1988 USA and a Miss America.
Well, who's the one that went to Miss Universe? She's the one who counts.
Oh, God. They both, I think, won.
I think Miss USA goes to Universe.
Okay. Yeah, that would have been Courtney Gibbs? I think it was.
I don't know, but I hear that Courtney, she was on All My Children, Selena, in 1992.
I know, I was never in All My Children. I'm being in The Restless Watcher.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you wouldn't know.
No. She did star in some butter commercials, though.
Ooh. Dixie Crystals must be all over that, the butter queen.
That's so good. When you started, when that bartender said, "Oh, you missed Texas 1988," was that in Seattle?
Yes, it was.
So you started in Seattle because you moved from somewhere else, right? You're from Minnesota, I think.
Oh, sorry, that was in. I just lied to you. That was in Minneapolis when that happened.
This seems to be a theme in your life: lying, telling people who you are, except not.
I'm not Miss Texas 1988, and I was not named that in Seattle. I was named that in Minneapolis. By a bartender named John, who gave me my name, and I should reach out to him and tell him how grateful I am that that gave me my brand.
When was that? How many years in are you now?
That would have, that was probably 2014, 2015.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You've been on it for a while.
Yeah. I eased into drag from performance art. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Performance art, like clowning? Like what kind of thing?
So the original Miss Texas 1988 thing was technically not a drag performance. It was for Queertopia performance art festival.
Okay. And
when I was in college, I was so tired of auditioning for these plays where I would get like cast as like a cis man in some like boring role for straight people. And
Hillary knows all about that.
No, I would get cast as the supporting character no one wanted to be.
Oh, God. See, it's all bad.
It's always bad.
You want to be any of it.
It's always bad.
Done with Shakespeare. I took a workshop from performance artist Tim Miller and started doing solo performances. And I had taken costuming classes and light classes. So I was doing these little mini performance art pieces, playing with gender and costumes. And eventually somebody was just like, oh, I like your drag.
Cool.
Yeah. So then I was
like, oh, I guess I'm a drag queen.
Yeah. I started going to like amateur shows to be like, well, I should learn what this is. Yeah.
Nice.
Totally. I remember the first time I got into drag. You remember, Selena, didn't know me then. I was Ra-Ra-Ra-Mama, and like that was in theater school. And I was so against the idea of becoming a drag queen because I was like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm a theater kid. Like, I respect the queens. They're amazing. But I'm not that. I'm an artist.
And now look at you.
I know. I'm just a straight up. Well, I was on Camp Wanageeky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hit an all-time low after that point.
You're out there being glamorous and glorious and wearing that wig that I want to steal from you that you posted in Last That Blonde.
Which one?
It's like
all
of
them.
It was like a Marilyn.
All of them?
Yes, yeah. You had like a short Marilyn icy blonde.
In the mother-daughter photo?
Oh. Yeah.
I don't know if I saw it. It was your last year when you were revealing that there was going to be a.
It's right there behind me.
Yeah. Oh, yes, her. Because it was. Yeah, you were wearing it while telling us that you're going to release the unseen episode of Call Wanakiki.
Yes.
Which I am awaiting. I'm a Call Wanakiki fan.
Yes,
well, listen, I'll go over to Hillary's, I'll steal the wig, and I'll bring it to Seattle next time I'm in town.
Perfect.
My favorite thing is my favorite thing is when Miss Texas sent me a little video of them and Riley Poppy Seed singing the Cult Wanakiki theme song.
You put it in the episode. I watched it.
Yeah.
That was great. Was Riley in town?
Yeah. Riley came out here and had a blast. Seattle absolutely adored Riley. Seattle was thrilled to have. But.
Did you host everybody for the finale or no?
No, finale, it was just people in their hometowns. I had kind of talked a little bit about bringing people, and then there was like, maybe somebody will have a viewing party. Maybe, like, Dee Dee ended up having a viewing party, so it just didn't all come together. But we did do a little, right before watching the episode, a little FaceTime just to be like, love you.
Did you watch the episode before the viewing party?
We were going to FaceTime while watching the episode all together.
Uh-huh.
I woke up at 8 a.m. Seattle time. My parents came into town for the finale, which was really cute.
Oh my God.
They went to their hotel room because we were all, like, all going to watch it. And then I don't know if you noticed, the episode came out super late.
It did. Yeah. Which I'm glad about, because then you weren't like watching it as soon as you woke up kind of thing.
Listen, this is, well, then we just sat around for hours and hours and hours and waited. And then we were like, our viewing parties. I was watching it well, like painting, after being like, am I even going to have an episode to play?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I have to ask y'all, what the hell is Civic Day? Because apparently that's why the episode was delayed.
Oh, because of a civic holiday? Oh, because Out TV's Canadian.
Yeah.
Okay, so we try to have a long weekend every month. And so our civic holiday in August, I think, is just one that we made up.
Yeah, it's not even a real holiday. Okay. Yeah.
The three of us almost died.
I can't believe Canada did you dirty like that. That's Hillary's revenge. That's
Hillary's revenge. I didn't mean it. I mean, everyone on my season was taking revenge on me the whole time. They were constantly asking me, like, go to Out TV and, like, knock on their door. And I'm like, I don't live next to Out TV. What are you talking about?
That is hilarious. That's so wild. I can't believe we did that to you.
Yeah. So
when you watch,
there's two things that we've done against you now. Now we've been the Out TV problem, and we like almost choked you in your campfire.
Yes, yes.
On the way to camp. Like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, God.
No. That wasn't us.
I don't know. It's probably always
us. Canadian fires at the time, but that's all.
Okay.
of humanity's fault, because we need to take better care of our environment.
Yeah.
That must have been the Alberta wildfires, not the Quebec ones. Okay, so wait.
Still
so
from Canada.
when you watched the episode, then did you get to see it before the viewing party?
Because I was like, I don't know if I have time. I like skipped to the end.
Yeah.
Watched it. Fell off. I was sitting on the edge of my bed, and I just like literally just fell off my bed and onto the floor.
Oh no!
And so, like, shocked and moved and then was like, okay, now I have like 45 minutes max to get into full drag.
So I'm crying.
That was your moment. That was your moment when you actually found out. You were you skipped to the end and you fell on your knees and were like,
I even on my knees. I missed my knees. I just face planted on my floor.
Yes.
And then I got into drag and I watched what I could of the episode while painting frantically, and then went to the gig and had to put on a little poker face and then played it for everyone while I was still like, yeah.
So, at that point, did you not just want to be surprised when you watched it? Like, did you not just want to like get there and watch?
It would have killed me.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
I have the ADHDs and there's no impulse control. And I also was just afraid of walking in and knowing from other people's facial expressions.
Oh, of course. Because other people would have watched it. Right.
Yes. And I was like, I can't take that. And then sit in this while people are staring at me knowing what happened.
Yeah. Right. You would walk in the bar and instantly, so that girl would be like, hey, Texas. Like,
no. No matter what, I'd be like, I don't know if that was you won or you lost. Or, you know?
Yeah, you're analyzing everything.
Yeah, or you did an episode and you're drunk. I don't
know. It was really fucking cool to see that your entire community came, like how busy that bar was, how many other drag performers were there to support you. Because Hillary didn't get that.
No. That's not true. That's not true.
I'm sure people were. Up and you watched it with Clinica, right? They were
Do you want to know that story?
you know very clearly
because you're going to put two and two together very quickly that Clinica Depressus was on your season of Camp Warren.
Yes, and did know,
and so found out that they were in fact the winner days, weeks ahead of our finale. And so I went to her house, to their house in Columbus. And
in a whole other country, you crossed the border.
On their little couch in that room, and we watched the episode around noon on their phone because the computer wouldn't work because OutTV is such a pain in the ass half the time. And Clinica dead ass knew the whole time and gaslit me that they didn't know.
Oh, poker face.
I was I have video. I took video of that moment.
I think I watched the video of,
yeah, it's on YouTube.
Now, the question is, did you, so that was what I was curious with, like, what did, is it true that they accidentally aired You Winning in Canada?
No,
that's not true.
You think that they'd let me win?
there is a rumor that they filmed the wrong
aired the wrong
episode in Canada.
Oh my god, that's so you haven't heard funny.
That? Yeah, I can confirm because I was watching it in Canada. That did not happen.
Yeah.
I wish. I mean, of course, we know that all of the winners get filmed, though. So, like, they could have.
Right. I believed it. I was like, yeah. And without TV, like, bless their little hearts, but with the number of, like, typos and, like, putting up releasing this episode here or doing whatever, I would not have put it past.
Oh, it would have been so funny because I was in Columbus at the time. If I would have watched myself lose and then my friends in Canada would have watched me win and they're like, what are you talking about, Hillary? It was not.
Or I'll just gaslighting you.
Well, yeah. Good to know that's just part of legend and
fully. Right. Well, I mean, it is hard to lose, but you're saying it's also very hard to win. Are you still in a bit of a state of disbelief?
So I was watching it a second time at the viewing party, and my best friend Mandy, who's like I'm moving in with, was staring at my face while I was watching it, and she said I could almost tell by how somber you looked that you had already watched it and that you had won. Because I talked about this with my therapist, like, I am a doomsdayer, and I also just, you know, through various life experiences, you know, haven't cultivated a great sense of self-confidence.
Right.
And that's why I am the failure queen, is because I want to stand up for anybody who also has that mindset that's been, you know, forced onto them. And so I had a great plan for losing, you know. I'm a very gracious loser. I would have been, you know, so loving and, like, stoked for anybody else, and, you know, would have, you know, taken my, you know, I would have been disappointed, but and then I was going to go on a loser tour, you know, like, plan for winning, because I just, it's a foreign feeling to me. Even if I have won other stuff in the past, I always, So I've worked through some imposter syndrome, and I've worked through, you know, I looked back and I was like, I had the track record win. I'm proud of what I did. And the big thing that, because I did like a full audit of anything that has been commented on, and I looked for whatever word was used the most, and expecting it to be like congratulations or wow, the word that was most used was deserved. And that
helped
a lot. Because I was like, people would not say that if they didn't feel that.
No, it's true.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. I mean, you were definitely the points winner, the overall winner. And I think that's kind of the tea.
That being said, also
Clinica was too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of really important commentary in that finale episode on the fact that it's been just a bunch of white winners. And that is, for a second, I was like, well, I also need to audit and make sure that I'm not winning just out of, like, white mediocrity. And I don't feel I did, looking through comments in my work. But what I did settle on, because, like, that still is a really valid concern and very real, is that it's kind of ridiculous, and not kind of, it is ridiculous that on this show and all of the drag shows that are out there, we're still only seeing maybe one king a season and 80% white casts. Like, what odds does that create for that one person to have a 10% chance of winning and have to make it all the way through a competition and represent that community? We got to fix that. We got to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it's so true.
And I think Riley broke a lot of barriers in that regard, like making it to the finale, like the first king to make it to the finale.
Yeah, he should be so proud. Amazing. And I know so many kings in general, but like locally, who were so inspired by seeing him on the show. And I would like all of them to audition as well.
So I guess what you're saying is really you should have thrown the competition and like not worn that really great outfit in the first, in the last, you know, you should have just like come out naked or something and just like, nah, 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 nah.
Nah, I just, I, you know, I wanted, I showed up, I did my best, and I do, I'm proud of what I did, and I'm happy that I got the win.
But yeah.
I do need these competitions changing with their casting biases.
Totally.
With like a lot of love and respect for Camp Waikiki and Sugar Bakers, obviously, but it's not just them, it's across the board, all of our, in local drag scenes too, like there's still an issue of not booking kings, and all white cast should just never be a thing.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Dang, that's my opinion. And those are the things that I wanted to sit with myself and make sure that I am using this platform to be clear and vocal about that, and also to make sure that I wasn't, by winning, somehow, yeah, like getting that out of bias or an under.
Yeah.
Not at all. It's so important that you're bringing those things up, though. But I do think you were deserving. You're just so, you're so humble, you know? You just kind of take it. And it's, when I was thinking about the Riley situation, too, and, it's tough. But, like, I would really want Riley to have won if they really deserve to win. Right. And I just think, at the end of the day, I hate to say that term, but, like, you kind of beat them. So, I don't...
Right.
Honestly, I'd rather people screaming, yeah, justice for Riley. You know, that kind of really favorable moment of, like, which is actually sometimes better than winning.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Minus the $10,000, but...
Out of all of the seasons of Drag Race or anything that I've ever watched, it is the people who are, like, underdogs or, you know, got shorted a little bit that I remember, so...
Right. So you are going to be forgotten.
I'm going to take my mighty swell and turn it into obscurity.
I cannot stand for a Clinica Riley monopoly of the series as best friends winners.
Oh my God, yeah. Only Ohio rules all of camp.
Yes. By the rumors, there's even more of them coming. My God.
Ooh, exciting.
Are we allowed to talk about season 6 rumors?
I don't know. You're not on it. I don't know enough.
So I'll do the talking. No.
I'm excited for it, though. I can't believe Camp Waikiki is now going to be 6 seasons long. That's wild.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, because you filmed your season before season 5 aired. Season 4 aired. Did you feel like you were missing out on anything having not seen what happened the year before you filmed?
Absolutely.
Right? Because like you're not like, because you're like, you want to know the lore, right? You want to know like all the challenge winners and like all this.
Yeah. And, you know, there was concerns over like, well, is this outfit too much like this outfit that we hadn't even got to see? Because
Yeah.
And I know that was a conversation for the Sugar Bakers of like, well, they didn't see they didn't have any knowledge of the episode before they came here, so they couldn't be a copy.
Yeah. So they made comments like that, like, oh, this person wore this last season.
Yeah. Or like, they're like, oh,
why was Muffy Vander? Why did Muffy Vander literally rent Hillary's outfit? Like,
when she came out in the spooky eyes.
Yeah, exactly. She just rented it straight up.
Yeah. And also, that was like season 4. I think each season, for different reasons, really progressed the series, and season 4 definitely was doing that. And so it's actually just really exciting. And I know we got to see, I think, the first couple of episodes. My timeline is a little shaky, but
okay.
I do remember getting ready and then watching season 4 start, and then I was like, oh, okay, we have to amp up our camp, because there's some real fantastic stuff happening.
And y'all did, like, every single runway there were some stuff we'd never seen before. Like, there were people really brought it, and everybody did.
I think we were all had from watching the beginning of season 4 been like, oh, we gotta we gotta step it up.
Yeah.
And I think individually we all did like go in being like, yeah, we're gonna give this our all, we're gonna crush it. And then we all got there and looked at each other's stuff and we're like, oh, so we all had that thought and now yeah. now it's a big competition.
Which is great. Like that's what I wanna see. I wanna see a season where like there's not a front runner or two front runners. Like everybody's a contender.
Yeah. It was from the beginning, and that's something we talked about is how cheesy it seems to watch reality TV shows, and everybody says like, "Wow, that person went home, and now it's real." But we all absolutely had that exact feeling the moment that Dixie Crystals took a hike. We were like, "Oh shit!" Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you guys had so many activity challenges, like so many.
Yeah.
Something that I've noticed, because you know you have your own Wikipedia page now on the RuPaul's Drag Race wiki. Yeah. But that, you know, those people, those goblins, they like count points.
Goblins.
and they count points based on everything, like activity wins, talent show wins.
Yeah.
Like some of you have like 6, 7, 8 points. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, those, I think the activities are just kind of fun and games. Like they don't
necessarily. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's just more opportunity for comedy. Like it's just, more opportunity to like show yourself off as a comedian.
Because that's the real thing is not whether you are making a birdhouse or not, but what was your can't you can't do attitude? Were you making good television, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, bye, Kitty.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's your cat. Your cat climbed across here. Well, I think that's time to take a quick break.
Yeah, I got to go play with this guy to get his energy out.
Okay. Well, we'll be back with Miss Texas in just a bit, squirrels. See ya.
And then other people started doing poo too, so.
And welcome back to the podcast. So we were just talking a little bit about poop and pee-pee and the fact that you are, in fact, the poo-poo and pee-pee queen of Seattle.
It was just a poo-poo pee-pee season. We got the body fluids were out this
which year. I really appreciate, and I like that the Sugar Bakers and Ruthie were like game for it. They weren't like, well, that was a little crass. They were like, yeah, it was more pee and poo.
Do you remember when Rock'em Sakura made a fart joke on RuPaul's Drag Race and got kicked off?
By people who always make fart jokes? Yes, I do.
Yeah, by
that.
People who made fart jokes the next episode. Like,
yeah. They made a whole challenge about fart jokes, but Rock'em couldn't say the word fart. That was fun. That was fun. But no, I'm really glad you brought that to television to like raise awareness about bowel movement.
Oh yeah, and you were kind of called on this show kind of a message queen. They're starting to call you a message queen.
Oh yeah.
Are you okay with being called a message queen?
Well, I thought
you brought a lot of messages, like you know, save the whales, shave the whales. I don't know, stuff like that.
I mean, this is the thing. I was like, "Well, am I the message queen?" And I was like, "Well, I'm such an overthinker. Like, you ask me, like, my political manifesto behind any of my drag, and I will give. I can be doing the most silly, ridiculous, seemingly nonsensical thing, and I will be like, this is actually like a reference to this like niche like feminist article from the 1800s. You know, like there." I probably, hopefully, always have a message. I think when a Kiki, you're asked to specifically say, "Well, why is this look important? What does this look do? You know, when you heard this prompt, what did that call from you, and what do you want to say if you're on television?" So it's kind of a little strange to be like, "Wow, you made it a point." You know, and that's the thing. It's like only one of my outfits I would say had a really didactic approach, you know, where really clear like message, and that's because it was the flower power theme,
right.
And my literal theme in my brain was about protesters and people with a message.
Yeah,
everything else I think it was more hidden within the artistry, But of course, it had a message behind it. I would hope that all of our drag, you know, even if the message is joy or laughter in this world, yeah, that's a message.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I like that you even brought that into that challenge where you were guessing dead celebrities or dead singers. Yeah. And then you were like, I don't know this one, but I'll educate you on this one. I loved that. Also, I'm very disappointed nobody got Karen Carpenter. I was like screaming at my television. I was like, close to you. Come on, Karen Carpenter.
Yeah, that's fine. I was supposed to actually be, instead of Camp on a Geeky, I was supposed to be in London getting a queer history degree. I was supposed to get a master's from Goldsmiths University. I'd gotten scholarships. Oh my God. I was all lined up. And then I had moving out of my apartment. I had canceled most of my gigs because it was 3 months to go. I told them I was leaving. And then they let me know that because of financial fallout from the pandemic, they weren't having the program.
Oh, no.
So I found a different apartment and contacted all of my gigs and said, just kidding, I'm staying. And
oh my God, that is devastating.
Yeah.
But, and so then the most devastating part was when the sugar bakers called and you're like, oh, not you too. No.
I was really worried that the end of that story was going to be like, I was all set to go, but then I got the call for Camp Wanagiki and I chose that instead. I was like, no.
No, I just was like, I thought about doing like auditioning for Camp Wanagiki before. And so I was like, well, now is the time. I'm just going to throw all of the opportunities align. And I was pleasantly surprised. And
grateful. How old are you? Ooh, yeah. Do you want to tell? You don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
I think the Camp Wanagiki, like,
wiki
all page, yeah, the wiki page still has me as to be determined.
Oh my God. Okay,
now I'm like, I'm keeping it a secret.
No, we can keep it as that. We can totally keep it as that.
The to be determined, yeah. Just so you know, Selena, no one who's ever been on Camp Wanagiki has been under the age of 40, so we're all old. Old campy gals, you know what I mean? Like, we're just that type.
Yeah. The only person under 40 is Ruthie Keister
on our season. So
yeah, Ruthie's the youngest one.
I just talked over you by accident. What'd you say to me?
Sorry.
Stop apologizing. That's not what Americans are for. You guys are supposed to be brash.
Yeah.
So Miss Texas, now that you've won the best drag competition show in the world, mm-hmm, it really kind of sets that level and people will now respect you completely and utterly.
Mm-hmm. People walk up to me on the street all the time and say, your shoe's untied. And then they walk away and I know it's because it's on Camp Wanagiki that they...
Where do you see yourself going? What's next? Are you going to go back to Britain for queer studies or are you going to, you know,
try to
make this a go?
Oh, they did reach out.
They reached out and asked if I would like to go this year, and I have turned them down. Okay. I was still rebuilding my life from the pandemic when I even applied.
Yeah.
And it was actually 3 years in the waiting because, yeah, I applied during the pandemic. Obviously, it wasn't happening. And then I got accepted, and they said it would all be virtual, like online. So I was like, well, I don't want to move to a different country to sit in an apartment where I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And then they canceled the year of that. So this year I just was like, I have too many other things going in my career right now. And I've honestly, doing some of that queer history stuff on Camp Wanagiki did let me know I can incorporate my love for queer history into it.
Yeah.
So not doing that. And I don't know what the next year is going to look like. I asked Clinica if I could contact them and just be like, you know, what from your last year, what do you think was like, absolutely do this or watch out for this or whatever, you know? Mm. So I need to reach out to them. And I also kind of am like, how big of a deal is this? You know,
mm-hmm, right.
It's one of the smaller shows, but it's still TV and it's growing momentum and I want to help it get more momentum. But it's, you know, only starting to break out, hopefully. And yeah, so I don't know if I'm like, do I try to do a tour? Do I just quit drag? And
Gosh, you have so many decisions to make. I'm so glad I didn't win.
I mean, well, I can ask you, as someone who's been on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what were you, just what momentum do you feel like happened for you after, in the year after, and what would be your highs or your lows, your pros, your cons, your do this, don't do that?
I don't know. I think it's just, you know, just go in and into yourself and figure out what you want. I took a little bit of a break because I needed it. And but at the same time, a lot of people just started talking to me a little differently, you know, and you can kind of use that to your advantage, you know. Literally go and tell someone, hi, I'm Miss Texas from TV. And, you know, it might open doors. Yeah. That then you can go places that you haven't been recognized before, which is kind of a great thing, you know?
Yeah. And that's, I want to go, I want to use it for sure as an opportunity to connect with other scenes. Cause I didn't even get to do that while it was airing. A lot of people traveled and I became I really wanted to get people to Seattle to get some hype. But I didn't end up, I was supposed to go to Chicago and then ended up not being able to go because too many like gig conflicts. But
yeah,
now I would like to do that. And hopefully people still care.
Oh yeah. Well, go travel the things. The thing is the Camp Wanakiki people, they're all over the place. There's such a sporadic all over the place community.
What I would love to do is go to an area and just whoever is kind of in a surrounding state say, hey, do you all want to come do like a little regional show together. I come on up there if you want to, if you're down to clown.
Yeah.
It was so strange. Like some places I went, like Deja brought me to Toledo and like everyone knew who I was. And I was like, how is this possible? My mother doesn't even know who I am. Like,
which one are you?
Yeah.
I think it might not be a show that matters to everyone, but to the people that it matters, it really does. Like it's
100%, like 7,000,000%.
That's exactly. I think there's a bunch of people in Sweden who would love to meet you.
Yeah.
isn't that like your biggest market right now for Cult Wanakiki? Don't you have a bunch of people in Sweden?
I don't know. They're all over the place. They're all over the place. Like I said, it's hard to nail them down.
You should. You should be. You're the new queen of Sweden. Get over there.
They're all waiting to hear who won, but they won't find out until Hillary releases the episode.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't know yet. I can't believe it.
I do love. I am really happy that y'all did that and that Flapping and Fawning was reviewing it as well. Like, it was cool just to, you know, get other people's perspective. and just a good way to hype the show. And
I mean, that's another thing that you gain is just like the Camp Wanakiki family. Like some of them are less interested in doing it and whatever. I mean, they're all exist. We're the bigger and bigger community, you know, and it really shows like how many of us, like these campy weirdos, there actually are. And the community is growing. And I love how that brings us together.
But it's especially with the like takeover of RuPaul's Drag Race and the like kind of niche, like cool but like also niche style of drag that Dragula highlights. Campy drag needs a platform.
Yeah, without fashion accessories and all that stuff that they force us to do on RuPaul's Drag Race.
I don't, it's amazing when somebody looks gorgeous in a full-length gown and can do the splits. That's awesome. It's cool when somebody is like creepy and like fashion forward while sticking needles through their face. And goddamn, some of us need to wear a cheap wig and make some fart jokes.
Full on poo jokes.
That's exactly it. Oh my God. Oh my God.
But you know, as like a queer historian, like camp drag is such like an important And I think in the past, much more represented style of drag. And so I don't want to, like, it's important history that I don't want to lose, you know? Yeah. Cause it is, that's the stuff that I think, you know, it is certainly subversive to break gender norms and look gorgeous doing it. But when you're truly like bending social norms, not fitting, you know, when now that everything is about like makeup and fashion within drag and being like, you know, glamorous, and it's, we're losing an interest in like old style campy drag.
Yeah.
Says like, we don't have to fit into this, which is my whole, you know, thing is like, we don't have to fit into this.
Old school. Do you ever find that people call what you do kind of old school?
Not necessarily what I do. Because I don't even think I necessarily do old school camp. I just have a lot of respect for it.
Right. Yeah.
I just do weird shit. And so most people are like, what the fuck? You know, like, I catch people off guard a little bit. They certainly don't think I'm doing new school or old school. They're just confused.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think it's so interesting to, like, make old school new school again. My favorite and least favorite compliment that I get sometimes from people is just, like, you're my favorite type of drag queen, but then they never show up at my show. And they're always the new girl at the dancer show. And I'm like, well... there's clearly a disconnect here.
Put your money where your mouth is. You gotta come support it if you want to see it.
Yeah, but also like Toronto is a lot more heavily favoring marathon drag, which I don't know if you know what that means, but for us it's where you're booked to do like 3 sets of 4 songs.
That's a lot.
So there's drag happening at all times. Like for you guys it's like you'll do 2 numbers each, right? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
In Toronto, it's like there's drag on stage at all times at these bars in the village. And you kind of become background noise and you kind of just have to cater to the crowd who wants to hear Ariana Grande, Lady Gaga, like all the big hits. Whereas like that's not necessarily what me and Hillary do. So we have a harder time finding an audience.
We're weirdos because the two of us, we just do improv and stuff together. But like even at our brunches, we do a bajillion songs.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So yeah, Toronto is a weird market where like if you come and work here, yeah, you will have to do like 3 or 4 songs back to back. That's just how it is.
So you can't do any concept or change your look to people.
Well, that's actually one thing that I really paid attention to when I was in Seattle is seeing you guys how like you were able to do concept numbers, which we don't often, like me and Hillary, we do our own shows where we are able to do that. But in general, like the main audience is not going to see a show like that.
Yeah.
If somebody made me do that, I would like make a little script out of 4 songs and put on in a whole like one act show.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what else to do otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets monotonous. But okay, let me talk about
how you do that.
What's that?
That's also a lot more like a lot more stage time and lip sync practice.
It is so hard on your body. It is so hard.
You all should be making a lot of money.
I mean, the tips are good, but the rate is not. The rate is basically the same as what you guys pay.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a good rate, but not to do that.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Me. But when I was in, like, so I want to talk about Seattle drag a little bit.
Ooh,
you've been there for how long doing drag now?
I moved here in 2016.
Okay.
My first.
Because I think everyone's perception of Seattle drag is like Jinx Monsoon and Ben De La Creme, right? It's all like, it's theater, it's comedy, it's camp. But when I was there, I saw some of that. Like, I definitely saw that from you, but I also saw a lot of like dancing queens and look queens, and like there's a lot more variety in Seattle than I was expecting.
That's we definitely have like a track record for doing some of the weirdest or the most theatrical drag in a lot of places, but that only functions well because we really do a little bit of everything. And like that's for me, that's what an entertaining show is. Like I do want to see somebody in a rhinestone bodysuit do a flip off the stage. Yes, absolutely. Do I want to see that 14 times in a row? No.
Right. Then don't come to Toronto.
Yeah, it's just, I just, if when everybody has their superpower and then you have, you know, like a dancing queen, like a perfect, like classic ballad, somebody doing something theatrical and weird that you've never thought of before, when you have like all of that in a show, it just makes a better show. So.
Yes.
That's something that we lack a lot, unfortunately. It's too bad.
Yeah. It's kind of what our West End was like pre-pandemic. Like we had like the Toronto Village or the Gay Village, which is like in the center of Toronto. And then the West End drag was a lot more alternative, more weirdos, more concept shows. But we lost all our spaces during the lockdowns. Pandemic. So now we're trying to rebuild.
Yeah. It really took a toll. I'm proud that drag still exists. I'm happy that we made it.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, the pandemic was pretty good because it made people discover RuPaul's Drag Race on Netflix, and then they all suddenly fell in love with drag and started showing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
People definitely like came out in force once they could because they realized how important that is for their like community and mental health to be out and doing that.
Yeah.
Did y'all get into the virtual shows pretty heavily as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We did a lot of that.
Yeah. I was basically still like doing three shows a week, just sitting in front of my camera.
Right?
Wow. Just
being painted on my wall.
I kind of miss it. Like, it was so great having to not put on pads and only be filmed from like here up and just like have people commenting, like seeing in real time people's thoughts. I thought that was fun. That was great.
I thought I was learning so many valuable skills. I was so proud. Yeah, and then I'm going to, you know, have all of my iMovie stuff ready to go. And, and then people are like, okay, it's done. We don't need you to do that anymore.
Yeah. Me and Hillary made a couple of music videos. True. Little parody videos. Yeah.
I focused on that stuff. I still have taken a lot out of the pandemic with iMovie and, well, not iMovie, but like Final Cut and stuff. Because with the YouTube, I actually really like the YouTube environment. I'm not like popular, but I'm working on it.
No, yeah, you definitely are using those skills and continuing. And my vote is obviously for some camp history going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I just watched that episode and I agree. I want to hear more camp history as well.
Yeah, I think it might be fun. And now that I know Miss Texas is a camp historian, I might have to use their expertise a bit.
Yeah.
I don't have a degree, so I don't have to say.
And here's Miss Texas. Take it away. Okay, bye.
Actually, one of my Pride gigs was doing a 15-minute talk for Lululemon on the history of Pride.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think they just wanted me to be like, you know, like, yeah, Stonewall. And I was like... Yep. We're going back to ancient Egypt when the first hieroglyphic of a gay couple was
That's perfect.
And then the Vikings, well, they like to inherit the essence, if you know what I mean. I think it's so funny. No, all they want to know is they just want to make sure that they don't feel bad anymore. They're like, but are we doing a good job, right? We're allies, you know. That makes us feel good, right?
I did meet some sweet people, and then I realized that apparently the company had some issues.
Oh, yeah.
Other people were like, "Oh, you did that for that company," but sued by Lululemon. I will say I met some very lovely people who had queer people in their lives, and were very grateful for an entire world history.
Okay. You did important work. You did important work. Yeah. You educated the masses.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We've talked for a while, but like what's your favorite part of being Miss Texas? Miss Texas?
I'm a squishy feely person in my heart. Aww. Ultimately. And so sometimes I feel like I say stuff that, you remember that scene in Mean Girls where the person's like, I baked a cake with sparkles and I just want it all to go. Sometimes I feel a little bit like that person, or like people don't think it, you know, think I sound a little like, I don't know, you know, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. The thing that is special is it when people come up and like have like a personal thing that they bonded with what I was performing and feel good like I do a lot of like religious numbers to talk about that, and people come up afterwards and they'll say like, I grew up in a church and I really struggled, and watching that was really healing, or I really resonated with me, and thank you for doing that. Like that stuff where I'm like, I impacted somebody in a positive way and in some journey that they've been having. That's my favorite.
Yeah, you never know who you're going to connect with.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I always tell people where they're like, I don't know if I should do this number. And I'm like, you literally don't know who needs to hear that number. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You're
yeah.
a perfect little squishmallow. Those are popular right now, apparently, squishmallows.
I don't know. What are those?
I don't even know. It's like the new Pogs.
They're great. Pogs. They're so soft. It's weird.
Oh, you know. You're hip. You're cool.
You're young.
Squishy things. You don't know how old I am.
Well, I mean, I have to say, like, let's just gush a bit. I mean, yeah. When you first appeared on the screen on Camp Wanakiki, I knew you were like someone to beat. You were just so present. You were so present. You were funny. You were in it. You knew exactly who you were. And you just dressed well. Like, you just put out excellent, high detail, high concept stuff. Mm-hmm. It was just so clear you were going to do so well.
Yeah. You definitely had winner energy the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. I'm just an awkward bean, and I wanted to make stuff. So.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Did you feel that you would make it to the finale? Did you feel that from the beginning or no?
Oh, I go into every competition assuming that people won't get what I'm doing. I get eliminated immediately. That's just how I walk into it. But I did a local competition here, So You Think You Can Drag, and like, did a similar, like, my first thing was like walking out, tripping on the stage, intentionally losing a shoe, and then hobbling off through the wrong door. And, you know, people have gotten it, so I'm doing something right. Yeah. But there's always that risk that people will be like, wow, we hated that.
Yeah.
You know, like, but it's, you know, Camp Wanakiki is the right market for that, and for people understanding that. And yeah, I'm very self-critical, so I just don't assume that I'm going to win things. I always, you know, have more stuff I can work on and more, you know, things that I, you know, will nitpick on myself. And part of me thought that going on the show, either my greatest fears would be validated and everyone would say my internal thoughts out loud to me, yeah. or that people would say really nice things and it would help me reframe how I think about what I do. Yeah. And neither of those things were true. I just did things and people have resonated with them, and I'm still self-critical.
I mean, some of your castmates did hear their worst fear and hear their worst thoughts said out loud when Hillary reviewed them.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, that was the one time really went in on one of my looks. And I was like, this is going to happen at some point. The one time I really heard somebody just tear one of my looks apart was She Need This Gig.
Yes.
Hated
my profile. She was vicious. Not just to you, but in general. She hated everything.
And I was like, that's fine. Like, I appreciated the thoughts. There were definitely some things I actually reached out and said, like, hey, thank you for those pointers, because there's a couple things if I redid this look I would change. Like, yeah. I would do actual pink denim instead of the pleather. I like that you could, you know. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised that it didn't like squish my heart. I just was like able to pick out, well, I agree with that, and you know, I don't with that, and so what can I learn from?
Well, here's the thing. We can't be so precious about our art, because it is fully subjective. Like, there's no way around it. Like, art period is subjective. So like, people are going to resonate with it, some people are not. Some people are going to buy with it, some people are not.
It's totally true. Like, Wilma Fingerdew tore me a new asshole almost every time. And it was so funny. Flapjack said my turducken should have been a burlesque number in Flapping and Funny. I was like, screw you, Flapjack.
Jonathan Van Ness on a podcast talks about having a semi-permeable boundary, and if I understand it correctly, it's like the idea that you take like a criticism or hard thing and you, before you let it impact you personally, you say like, well, does that serve me? Then I'll let it in and use it, or does it not serve me and I can set it aside? And that's
it's very Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
It's important because you know what's crazy is that, like, for example, like when I was critiquing everyone, I mean, I was going for a little bit of drama, but not that much. And I did like everybody. And the truth is that there's people out there that are going to watch it that are going to be so much worse. Like, there's people that are literally, there's people out there that literally hate us.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know it's hard, but like sometimes it helps to have friends that are gonna let you know that, you know, how you can be better or can help. Cause it's a competition. Why else are you there? Just to everyone be like, you're amazing. Like,
it's opinions and I saw this and you have to determine if you wanted that person to see that or not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And you know, did a great friggin' job, you failure you.
I do. I'm the further away I get from it and the more I look back, the more proud I am of the work that I did. And yeah.
Good.
So, also, what was it like waiting, sitting on that secret, not knowing for a good 11 months that you won or knew not?
Losing my mind. You probably relate. Yeah, I'm sure.
I feel you.
It was because... Even just having to be like, I can't tell anybody that I was on this show and I can't tell, you know, having like all of the, like, I have to, you know, just pretend like this big career thing that I did and put so much, you know, that effort into and was sleep deprived in the woods. Like, the fact that you can't tell that to people or process that with anyone.
I remember I told Eve 6000, she was on Canada's Drag Race, one of my friends there. I was like, she was like, what was it like being in the woods there? And I was like, well, you know, did they have running water? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, we had this thing. And she was like, I had to shave in a bucket. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, why are you trying to compare your experience with me?
These shows are real intense. And you walk away with a little bit of like trauma of like, yeah.
Shaving in a
bucket. Rough. Yeah,
I mean, it's one thing you asked me. You were like, would you ever do Camp Wanakiki? And then I think I said to you, I don't like the outdoors. I don't think I can handle it.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle it.
Most people here don't. I was shocked. I thought everyone there would be like, I love camping. I like dirt and bugs. And everyone was like, no, get me out of here. And I was like, but I love it.
You're outside for so much of it. Yeah. And even when you're not, you're still like... in the woods.
You know, people were trying to constantly gaslight me that there were bugs in my wig the whole time. They're just like, Hillary, there's bugs living in your wig. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's a permanent thing.
One time, because I used to store my drag in a basement, I put on a wig and a spider crawled out and across my face.
Oh my God.
Oh, no.
It was great. I just wish it happened while I was on stage. I was like, come on, timing.
Yeah. Well, spider has a booking fee.
That spider is the new winner of Camp Wanakiki.
Yeah. It's like Ratatouille, but it was the spider in my room.
It's manipulating you.
So now there's going to be a new season. Are you excited to become an alumni after your reign and just like put a little distance behind you?
I mean, I'm excited to like gear into it and do everything I can from this show and continue to grow it. And I'm excited to encourage the next wave of people. There are people who are in Seattle who I've already reached out to be like, okay, your turn, go take the crown. You know,
nice.
I would like to, you know, be a helpful like mentor to anybody else who wants to do it. And yeah.
Are you the first Seattle queen on the show? Are you the first Seattle queen on the show?
There was a Seattle king, Vincent Millay.
Vincent was in Seattle. Okay.
Yeah. But
nice.
Little Vincent.
Yeah.
Well, Miss Texas, congratulations. Like, honestly, good job. I'm so proud of you. Yay.
Thank you. I'm excited for where things go from here, and I'm grateful for the show, and I'm grateful for you both and having me on here, like doing stuff like this, is like cements in that this was like an opportunity that the biggest thing that for me is connecting with people. That's like the biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
Like everybody at camp, the Sugar Bakers, Ruthie, all of the cast members, but also like past campers and just people who have like engaged with me from it. Cause
Everyone, please go out there, follow Miss Texas, go to their shows, you know, all that stuff. Find where they're performing, because Miss Texas puts on an amazing show, is a beautiful drag queen, drag king, drag thing, drag everything, drag failure. We have to try and get you up in Toronto sometime. I'm sure we can maybe make that happen.
Yeah, get over here. We got shows to put you on.
I hope that everyone books you everywhere. I hope that Muffy puts you on one of her shows, even, because she's, you know, the queen of shows. And just everyone, we love the sugar. Go to Milwaukee, force the Sugar Bakers to give you lots of hamburgers, and just congratulations, Miss Texas.
Congratulations! Yes!
Well, I appreciate you both, and thank you for having me on here. And yeah, I hope to work with you both more.
All right. Well,
oh, you will.
Any last words, Selena?
When is this episode coming out, Hillary?
You know, I think I'm going to put it out like really soon.
Great. Well, if you're in Toronto, come to the Funny Girl pageant, our first really big comedy pageant in a long time here in Toronto. I am competing. I'm your contestant number 8 at Comedy Bar Danforth. Come see us.
Yeah, and come out to Fan Expo in Toronto, actually. Selena and I are going to be there on the Thursday night, on the 28th, doing a live Squirrel Talk, where we're going to be doing a version of our play that we wrote just now, promoting the fact that we're doing the play that we wrote just now at Second City at the John Candy Box Theater on September 23rd.
Ayo! Come see some improv, kids.
We're still doing a thing. And of course, Sex and the Golden Girls, we're doing that every month at the Comedy Bar. So come out if you can.
Yeah.
And And Selena's doing brunch all the time. I mean, we've got, you're the brunch queen of Toronto now, Selena.
I'm doing my best. Doing my best.
For the divas.
Yes. All right. Great.
Well, I guess that's it. Okay.
We did it.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Ms. Texas. Thank you for being on this show. You get the last word, Ms. Texas. Just say something into the ether. Oh, perfect.
I can taste that one.
And it's a podcast, so they don't know where that came from.
Bye.
Goodbye now.